It's not easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water or stars in the sky.
Well, it wasn't easy being green on Saturday, and it wasn't easy to watch either at some points. So welcome to 12 Saturdays discussion of the Iowa win over the North Texas Green Beans, Mean Greens machines. I'm not 100% sure. With me always is Tori.
Hey, by the way, do you remember the green machine that was supposed to, like, I always wanted one of those because it was, like, better than a big wheel, allegedly. So, like, when I was, like, 4 or 5, I was like, man, I just wish I could get a green machine. I had to make do with my big wheel.
My cousin had one of those, and we trashed it. So, yeah, I know what you mean. And then also with us, of course, is the happiest man in Omaha this week, Bill Delahant.
Hey, guys. Go Hawks, beat Nebraska.
So, Bill, What did you enjoy more, Iowa, you know, kind of scrapping and clawing to a not pretty win, or seeing the Huskies take out the Huskers?
You know, I've got friends and family who listen to this podcast, and that's a proud fan base who's really down right now. So I'm going to go easy on Nebraska this week, but I think anybody who knows me knows what I enjoyed the most about yesterday.
So now you're choosing to be classy after all these years.
Tori, better late than never.
This is what Nebraska has fallen so far that Bill Delahant, the Bill Delahant, now finds them pitiful and pitiable.
So what you're saying is this, like, third level trolling by Bill. I can get behind that.
I'm very meta. It's not even fun.
Oh, totally on board with it. So, but let's talk about our game, because Tori mentioned that his voice is a little hoarse this week, and I can vouch for that. I mean, he had a few, we pre-gamed a little bit at the mill, and I can tell you that I've never heard you so vocal in victory as you were at the officiating during that first half.
Well, I mean, it was so beyond ridiculous, some of the calls. I mean, first of all, to overturn, I rewatched the game, you know, because you can't always see that great from the stands. So I thought I was going to be fair and say, you know, maybe some of these calls weren't that bad. Once I watch it on tape, they won't be as egregious. And actually, I got more enraged watching it on videotape. I mean, not videotape, though. God, am I old. On my DVR, that is. But, I mean, first of all, overturning that first touchdown was a joke anyway.
Unconscionable. Now,
he might have fumbled sort of kind of like at the goal line, but I'm almost certain the replay showed him breaking the plane before fumbling. And then to say that it was incontrovertible that he fumbled before the end zone is just a flat out BS lie. That was
they called
ridiculous.
It a TD on the field. So,
right. So there's one score that Iowa should have had. And then the touchdown that Iowa gave up right at the end of the second half. The only reason that happened was because of two of the worst personal foul calls I've ever seen. The AJ Epiniza late hit on the quarterback was ridiculous. First of all, he was blocked into the player to begin with.
Yeah.
Second of all, the ball was literally in the quarterback's hand when he made contact with him. Then he threw it. And finally, the judge wasn't even looking at the play, I don't think. So that was ridiculous. And then Manny Ragumba's late hit out of bounds. He was literally trying to help the guy not fall. If you watch it on replay, they get to the sideline, the momentum of the North Texas player starts taking him into the kicking net, and Ragumba puts his arm out to grab him and hold him up, but the guy fell down and into it. All the ref saw was him fall into the thing and caused the flag on Manny. So by all right, and here's why I'm so ticked off about it. I still don't have the gnome of knowledge because I lost again this week, but because I had too big of a point differential. Well, guess what? That game should have been 45-7, and Torrey wins. So, yeah, I have no voice. I sound ridiculous. I cannot believe I lost my voice watching Iowa play North Texas. That's asinine, but I blame it solely on the most pathetic officiating crew I've ever seen. And I wouldn't bitch about officiating in a loss because I don't want to be that guy. But in a big win like that, it was dumb and stupid and made the game too long and it was hot and I don't have a voice and I'm angry.
It was pathetic. Remember the screw job that we got in that Outback Bowl against Florida in January of 06?
We were there.
Yeah, I was there too.
Yeah.
Did I see you guys? I don't know if I knew you guys.
No, we had cheap seats up in the corner. We probably didn't. We weren't cool enough to hang with you. I was at the very top of the stadium myself.
But yeah, if you watch the replay, which I don't know why you would, but again, I don't know why you'd watch the replay of this game either. Chris Spielman is going, the game is moving too fast for these refs. This is unconscionable. And he just keeps repeating that over and over again. And I had the exact same thought watching yesterday. I mean, there was a sequence where every single play was a flag. And God, was that just unwatchable football. It was the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I've never seen a game that poorly officiated.
I will say this, though. I will say this. One of the Iowa beat writers made a good point, though, that one thing we can take as a positive out of this is in years past, if Iowa was getting the breaks going against them on some of those plays, you know, and I mean, we can have a whole nother conversation about the Wadley touchdown being taken back. In years past, against an outmatched foe at home as a double-digit favorite, that ends up making Iowa get all nervousy and bad and compounding mistakes and trying to force things to happen. Their response to all the ridiculousness of the first half of Saturday's game, I thought was fabulous. They went into the locker room, they regrouped. They said, look, we're bigger, stronger, faster, better. We're just going to lean on these sons of bitches until they cry for mercy. And that's exactly what happened. And to Jim's point, once more, they did the old boa constrictor offense. It just literally squoze the life. I know squoze isn't a word, but I like it. Squoze the life out of the hapless green machine.
Yeah.
Mean green. Bean greens. I can't remember their name.
I just call them the green beans. That's easier. Green giants, except they really weren't. But yeah, I was, you know, and the one that got me was, and I actually don't really fault the refs quite so much, although it was ticky-tack, Wadley's high step that got the touchdown off the board. And you know, I mean, I guess in the net scheme of things, you know, we turned around and scored, I think, shortly thereafter. So it's not, it didn't really impact the game. But, you know, I think because same thing happened on North Texas's last touchdown, unsportsmanlike, but you know what? I think the lesson is clear. If you're going to do that, do it in the end zone. Don't do it at the 2 yard line. Don't do it at the 6 yard line, right? Because they'll take points off the board. Do it in the end zone and they'll just assess it on the try or on the next kickoff. So I agree with both you guys that that was one of the most frustrating games to watch. I think some of the calls, I mean, you know, Bill, I don't know if this came through on the broadcast, but by the end of the game, the crowd was booing calls even when they went in Iowa's favor. They were just so pissed off at the ref, at the officiating. It wasn't even about like who's the call benefited or harmed at that point. It was just like, come on, this is such amateur hour.
Well, and you know, speaking of amateur hour, that's a nice segue into something that's been bothering me. You know, I'm not one of I'm not a huge, have one opinion real strongly one way or the other on the whole paying college players or not. But the way I look at it is we ask these kids to sacrifice, bust their ass, give blood, sweat, and tears, risk their health for our entertainment. And we can't even let them have, oh, what, we're going to have too much fun? You're going to show too much joy playing a game for our amusement? No, it's got to be serious business. And just hand the ball to the ref. F that S, okay? These kids, let them have some fun. I mean, I love college football 10 times more than the NFL. The only thing I like better about the NFL, literally, than college football, is that they actually are a little looser and let the players, you know, celebrate and enjoy themselves. And I'm not one of these old school fuddy-duddies that's like, you know, act like you've been there before, blah, blah, blah. You know what? You only get, you know, as a college player, if you're lucky, what are you going to play? Maybe 20 college games in your entire career by the time you actually are big enough, strong enough to get on the field. Have some fun, for God's sakes. Let the kids enjoy themselves.
Well, that's okay. So we could probably go on for quite a while about not only the officiating and whatever, but let's talk about the second half, because this was if nothing else, a tale of two halves. So I'm Bill. I'm curious as how it came across, because it still felt like the game was very much in doubt. Maybe late third quarter, early fourth quarter. Even Torrey made some comment, probably with 6 minutes left to play, about the Central Michigan game. I wanted to scream, you know, that he was invoking some bad mojo by bringing that one up. But I mean, did it feel that way from the broadcast, or did it feel like, you know, the Iowa Python was just squeezing a little bit more with every exhale and just kind of suffocating the life out of these guys, or was it still a nail biter?
It was very bizarre, and I don't think the broadcast had anything to do with it. We go into halftime down. But I don't know if it was the quality of opponent or just their reputation. I guess I just kind of thought, all right, well, this isn't going to be a name that score game. This is going to be an ugly win. But I guess I never was worried that we were going to lose, which I don't know. I guess I was overconfident on that. However, I think I read that the last three drives, we ran the ball 25 times and threw it three times. And that was totally noticeable. And I'm a guy who likes to see the sky filled with footballs. I want to see Stanley, you know, keep padding those stats, because I'm a big Stanley fan. But that was kind of impressive to watch. That was cool.
I think the stat that told it for me was Iowa had the ball for this time of possession for the entire game, like over 41 minutes. It's like,
yeah,
jeez.
Well, and like Bill, I never really had any serious doubt about the outcome. I mean, yeah, I made the joke about the Central Michigan game, but at halftime, I actually tweeted out, what I was most ticked off about was, you know, I said Iowa's still going to win this game by double digits, but they're not going to cover now, which they didn't. So that's kind of what I guess.
Well, you can thank Kirk for kneeling on the 2 yard line there with a minute left to go. I mean, I think he could have, you know, if he were a gambler, he could.
Hey, well, that and the foot and the touchdown taken off the board too. So yeah, it should have been a pretty easy cover, actually.
Really quick, I want to make the point. Does Vegas know their stuff or what? If Kirk doesn't decide to kneel on a 3 yard line, we go up and cover that big spread. I mean, they're good.
I think Vegas knows Ferentz and they know his tendencies.
So. Sure.
And they know how to bet on that. So
well, a conspiracy-minded fella might start having some questions about some of that officiating, because I maintain that game, by all rights and purposes, should have been something in the neighborhood of 45-7. But, that's, I guess, why they played him.
You know, old Rodney Dangerfield slipping the refs a bunch of money. Keep it fair, ref. Keep it fair.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you were, Kurt checking the score and put some last-minute money on the line, just, you know, cover any contract extension or that haircut he took to get in another.
Yeah, because the one thing he really needs is more cash.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Of course not. Well, listen, let's, you referenced the Gnome of Knowledge, Torrey. I think that, Bill is saying I was the outright winner this week. And I think solely because, although he and I called the same margin of victory, which was completely fictitious and out of left field, the difference being he called Smith Marset to have a big game, and I called James Butler. Now, James Butler did, you know, tote the rock a little bit, but I think the best play of the game is that he saved that touchdown from that fumble recovery.
Well, and it wasn't until I watched the replay that I knew not only did he truck ass back and cover it, but he also punched it out of the dude's arm when he was looking the other way, then outraced the guy, jumped on it, and then fought the guy off, who was much larger than him, trying to take it back away. So, yeah, all the way around, just an amazing hustle play, and it's going to stink to not see that kid out on the field for the next few weeks.
Yeah, and then just for the audience, we were recording this now on Sunday, and we just got the news that James Butler's out at least through the bye week. So who else was – okay, so that's the pick to click, and so now I guess the standings are Bill and I are tied for the Gnome of Knowledge. But I guess who was your actual player of the game? For me, I'll tell you, it was Josh Jackson. Some really sweet pass breakups, you know, for all of the complaints we had about officiating. He really didn't get a lot of pass interference or any – you know, it was all clean – really great high point of the ball, and of course the field goal block, and then the interception at the end to really kind of ice the victory. So I think for this time, you know, while you could make a case for some of the young running backs, I think Josh Jackson had just a monster game.
That's a great pick. I might go with Amani Hooker just because the missed tackle by Gervais that led to their big touchdown run, that was pretty glaring. And Hooker comes in, replaces him, and we don't hear his name at all. So he didn't noticeably screw anything up. Maybe they threw away from him. I don't know. But yeah, that we definitely needed some help on the back end there. And I think Hooker brought that.
Was he that good in the spring game, or was it just that the passing game was that bad and it was a dumpster fire and he was just there to, you know, tip over the dumpster? I really don't know. Do we have a good read on Gervais versus Hooker? Or
I mean,
well, Gervais got benched, so I mean, and he had the really glaringly whiffed tackle on that long, the only legitimate touchdown, in my opinion, that North Texas had on that long run there. In the first quarter. And, you know, there were a couple missed assignments on that. But, I mean, Gervais basically had him one-on-one about 8 yards from the line of scrimmage and just, I mean, got nothing but air. And I don't think he played much after that. So I got to say Amani's pretty good.
Last week, Iowa State did not have a good game.
Right, yeah. So my player of the game is it's slightly facetious. But upon the rewatch, and I think I even mentioned it to Jim at one point in the game, is number 36, the fullback, Brady Ross, was just blowing people up. And, yeah. And some of that running game in the second half where they were just, you know, 5 yards, 7 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 5 yards, at the point of attack, he was the tip of the spear on a lot of those really nice intermediate runs. I mean, they had no answer for him. So I know they don't get a lot of love, but I was loving the fullback. Well, Drake Kulik even had some real nice hits too. So I guess the fullback position is my player of the game. And why not when you have 41 minutes of time of possession?
Absolutely. Yeah. Great picks.
Well, gentlemen, should we toast this one and then move on to our guest?
I'm thirsty.
Let's toast it up. All right, our guest this week is former Hawkeye linebacker Roger Meyer. Roger was a redshirt freshman in 1997. He started a handful of games in 98, played in 9 games in 99, Kirk Ferentz's first season, saw action in all 12 games, and was a full-time starter as a senior in 2001. So he's kind of one of the handful of guys who played multiple seasons for Hayden Fry and Kirk Ferentz. He's kind of seen the lows of the program and went out a bowl champion. Roger, so good to have you on this week.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. And just to interject a little bit, I was known as Roger Meyer back in the day, but some people also know me as RJ.
RJ, why don't you tell us, first of all, just kind of how you got to be a Hawkeye, if there were other schools in the mix, just what your experience was like.
Sure. Yeah, I did come in 97, so 20 years ago, which is hard to believe. And I was recruited by Coach Fry. Great guy. It was awesome to be able to say that I played under him. As far as my recruiting path goes, you know, really I was mainly recruited by Iowa and Iowa State. And, of course, Dan McCarney was the coach at Iowa State at the time, and Paul Rhodes was the guy who recruited me specifically, who ended up obviously being the head coach at Iowa State there for what I think 8 or 9 years.
You must be so proud of that, RJ.
Which part?
No, that's the so proud Paul Rhodes. That's just my standard interjection. Yes, with the yes.
Nobody
Paul.
Gets you know, that joke, Tori. Nobody gets
these
that.
Are the jokes, people.
You know, I am not a huge Iowa State fan.
Awesome.
And I shouldn't even say this on a public forum, but I was unfortunately on the Hawkeye team who, when I stepped on the field, I never walked off the field a winner against that team.
Oh,
Yes. Yeah, this is very, very, very painful. But that being said, you know, I really enjoyed the recruiting process. I thought Coach McCarney, for the most part, was a good coach and a good recruiter. And I really did like Paul Rhodes. But ultimately, it came down to this. We are really, and I am from Iowa. I'm from Northwest Iowa, Central Lyon High School up in Northwest Iowa. Ultimately, this is called the Hawkeye State for a reason. So I came to Iowa in 97. I did commit to play under Coach Fry, and that was pretty awesome. I really only played the 1 year in 98 under him. I redshirted, like you guys said, in 97. And Coach Fry is a great guy. I love the guy. So Coach Fry, I cannot say enough good things about him. But at the same time, you know, he was dealing with some health issues, and I would say the discipline on the team wasn't where it needed to be. And Coach Ferentz obviously brought that to the table, and I think it was very much needed at the time. And obviously his track record kind of speaks for itself as he's been pretty successful, obviously.
For sure. You know, RJ, I was at Iowa from 90 to 93, so got to see a Rose Bowl year. So Hayden Fry is, of course, in my pantheon of not just great Iowa coaches or great Iowa sports guys, but I mean, great college football coaches. So you'll never hear a bad word about Hayden Fry. But one of the question that I was curious about, you know, you were there at the very beginnings of the Ferentz regime. How long did it take for you to kind of realize this guy had what it takes to be another great college football coach? And could you tell that right away? And did you ever think that he was the kind of guy that could last at a program as long as he has?
Well, I will say that Coach Fry and Coach Ferentz are two very different coaches. They're two very different personalities. They approach, I think, probably the game and both the game and life differently. Coach Fry is a super fun-loving guy. He gave his coaches a lot of responsibility, which is good. I will say he's obviously had quite the coaching tree over the years, and he's had a number of good coaches come up underneath him and go on and have good careers of their own. And so has Ferentz, but towards the end of Fry's tenure, you know, there was a lot of good coaches on the team at the time, but the quality of his assistant coaches maybe wasn't what it had been in the past. And I think that's maybe one of the reasons that the team struggled, because Coach Fry did tend to give his coaches a lot more, you know, it was on the assistant coach. Whereas I think Coach Ferentz obviously expects a lot out of his assistants, but he maybe expected more personally out of each individual player too, if that makes sense. Not that Coach Fry didn't, obviously he had some great players that he expected great things out of, but I think that transition where Coach Ferentz, and it was rough at the beginning of Coach Ferentz's tenure. Don't get me wrong. I was on the team his first season when we won one game. I think against Northern Illinois and it was one win. I went from, you know, being successful in high school to being on a one win team. It was a big change for a lot of the guys that were on the team that came from, you know, successful teams in high school. But I think the thing that Coach Ferentz really brought was a plan, and then a plan to execute on the plan. you see him making notes on the sideline all the time. He's just a very calculated, this is how we're going to do it. I do think him bringing Coach Doyle in also from the very beginning and having a pretty regimented strength and conditioning program really helped a lot. It helped obviously with the strength and the conditioning, but I think even more so what it helped with was the mindset, the toughness. You know, we used to have, I don't know if they still have the slogan break the rock, but that was kind of our mantra when Coach Doyle first came in. And you've probably heard the story, you know, a stone cutter hits the rock, 1,000 times and it doesn't do a single thing to the rock until the 1,001st time when finally the rock cracks in half. And that's kind of what our progression was. I mean, Coach Fry's last season, we won 3 games. Coach Ferentz's first year, we won 1 game and then went on to win 3 games Coach Ferentz's second year. So, I mean, literally, we won 7 games in my first three years of playing, and I think we won that many games my last year playing. So it was a tumultuous time. There was definitely a lot of change, a lot of ups and downs, and you know, guys left the team and bad-mouthed Coach Ferentz on the way out. But I guess that was a long answer for your question. But to get back to your original question, I think I could see it from the very beginning when Coach Ferentz started, because you know there was a lot of shakeup because I think there needed to be.
Yeah,
guys, you know, maybe kind of got complacent a little bit towards the end of Fry's tenure, and I just think there needed to be kind of a shakeup because we needed to do things differently. We needed more discipline. I think the number one, if you had to point to one thing, I think it was discipline. That's something I think Coach Ferentz really brought to the team at a point when we really, really, really needed more of that.
Yeah, you know, that's this is James speaking, by the way, the RJ. That's something similar that I've heard from talking to other players is the contrast between, you know, Fry was very much delegating a lot to position coaches and to assistant coaches and coordinators, whereas Ferentz is much more hands-on. So I think you can see that. I think, you know, Ferentz knows all of his players by name, and he knows just everything about each individual performance, and he's taken notes on them as an individual. And Tori and I have often joked around that, you know, like when you see him take a knee on the 2-yard line when he's got the game iced away, is that this is less of a football coach and more of a football teacher. You know, he feels like I'm teaching graduate level football here. Try to keep up, you know. So,
yeah,
this is Bill again. I was just thinking back a game that I was at. This would have been my freshman year of college. Your junior year was that 2000 Northwestern game, and
My best game of college.
That's where I'm going with this. Northwestern, the week before, Rose Bowl bound, hangs 54 on Michigan. They come in. You have, I think, 16 tackles against them. You're Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week. And, you know, kind of similarly, this week we've got Penn State coming in, who's got this incredible offense. I guess if you can remember back to that, what was your mindset and what was the team's mindset? With a big, you're the underdog at home, a big time team coming in. Do you remember, you know, what the mood was like on the team, what the prep was like that week, what Kirk Ferentz said to you guys? How did you guys kind of prepare for that?
Honestly, Coach Ferentz, pretty much every week is business. I mean, he's very Bill Belichick in that respect. He doesn't necessarily make, you know, it's not like, hey, we've got, I think Northwestern was what, number 18 at the time or something. We've got number 18 team coming in. They were, I think, basically Rose Bowl bound at the time. And he didn't put a big bullseye on them, if I remember things correctly. And he's kind of that way. I mean, he doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. It's just, it's business, right? I mean, we just have to plan our game plan and practice our game plan and stick to our game plan during the game. And we'll come out the end of the game, hopefully a victor. But I think going back to your comments about Penn State, I do think having played Penn State that week before the Northwestern game and being pushed to the brink, I mean, we played them tough and we came out victors. You know, it was a double overtime game.
Yeah, that's actually another one I wanted to ask you about.
I remember I was on the field when Ryan Hansen intercepted the pass behind me. I turned around and I remember him catching that interception, and we beat Penn State up in Happy Valley. I mean, that was quite the quite the atmosphere up there. I don't know if you guys have been to a game there, but it was crazy.
On my bucket list.
It was pretty awesome. The only stadium I did not play in the Big Ten was the Big House at Michigan, because we played them at Kinnick. Then they went off our schedule, and then we played them at Kinnick again.
You'd have been in that game where you guys had Michigan beat, but oh my God, who is there?
They
made the most Tom amazing Brady. Catch I have ever seen yes. in an oh. actual person.
Walker,
was right in front of
Walker,
our seat,
right?
Oh man, Marquise what a Walker. Heartbreaker!
Walker, yes.
Ugh. Oh, that game about killed me.
It was just absolutely heartbreaking. Yeah,
and that that brings me to my question, RJ, which is one of my favorite all time books is Pat Conroy's My Losing Season, and it's about basketball playing at the Citadel and how they lost just some ungodly amount of games, and it's talking about kind of the mindset you have to have as a player to just keep breaking, you know, hitting that rock like you talked about. Take me through your personal mindset on that. You know, as you mentioned, losing so much, you only winning one game and then three. How what do you do to keep motivated and keep working when you're not getting that payoff of the joy of winning?
You know, that's a good question. I really think it goes back to that break the rock mentality. It was, you know, we weren't coming obviously up winners on the scoreboard, but at the same time, I think we could all see kind of the light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. And I will say my class, the 97 recruiting class, I think we had a pretty good class. We had, you know, obviously Kyle McCann, Liddell Betts, who everybody remembers. Everyone remembers the receivers and the running backs. Khalil Hill. We had some great players, and we stuck together. And I think we almost kind of just willed ourselves to win that last year. But it is tough when you're going through it. But I think part of the payoff is the highs are so much more high than the lows that when you get a taste, like Coach Ferentz's first win, Big Ten win in Kinnick against Michigan State. I'm sure you guys remember that. It was like, it's the biggest high that you just like, you feed off of it. So I don't know. I mean, obviously thinking back, it's kind of like, how did we as a team weather those storms? Because and part of it is a certain sense of self pride. And I think that's maybe, not to throw any individuals under the bus, but I think maybe that was part of the shakeup when Ferentz first came in. Is, you know, maybe the guys that had the mentality to stick it through and ultimately turn the program around are the guys that stuck around. Maybe that washout needed to happen. I don't know, because we did lose quite a few guys.
Yeah.
During that transition. But I really do think the hot, those wins were so special that, you know, you just keep building on them.
Well, and to pat our own backs a little bit, it's got to help to still see pretty big amount of fans. And I got to imagine that you guys got a little bit of a lift from the Iowa fan base, which I think is one of those that will stick with their team through thick and thin more than some,
that,
maybe.
That, no question, that's huge. You know, people a lot of times will ask, you know, what were the best places to play? And, you know, what was the loudest stadium? And really, outside of the Metrodome, which that's loud for obvious reasons. And again, I'm not giving the Metrodome any credit because it's a dome. I'm not giving their fans any credit. And in fact, I was at the game where we took their... We were just talking about this weekend, where our fans took their goalposts out of the stadium. Kinnick, though... I will say Kinnick is one of those stadiums. It's like a little hidden gem that a lot of people don't know about. And I think part of the reason is because the fans literally feel like they're on top of you. First of all, the sidelines aren't very big. Secondly, it's kind of a steep angle on the seats, and it kind of feels like the fans are on top of you. And I would imagine it's probably even louder now than it was when I played, because, you know, they've got the bigger press box and things like that to kind of keep the sound even further in the stadium. But Kinnick was an unbelievable place to play.
Yeah. So, hey, just turning – this is James again, RJ. Just pivoting a little bit towards this year. I imagine you're keeping up with the current team and have all these seasons. You know, the defense looked untouchable in week one, and maybe, you know, a little questionable in week two and first half of last week. I mean, what are you seeing out there that is, I mean, that maybe doesn't register with the casual fans? Are you seeing progress? Are you seeing development? Are you seeing them take two steps forward, one step back? Or, you know, how would you characterize it?
That's a great question. And I actually thought about that that type of a question this weekend when I was watching the defense. And honestly, I don't know what to put my finger on. Because like you said, the first week, and coming into the season, I thought this defense is just going to, you know, hold people to shutouts, and they're going to be an unbelievable defense. And don't get me wrong, they're very good, and they played great the first week. But I do think they would probably even tell you the last 2 weeks, their play has been somewhat disappointing. And I don't know why. I really don't know what to put my finger on as far as that is concerned. That's a great question. I do think there obviously is some concern, but I don't know what it is. If it's
so, no magic silver bullets for us today, huh?
I don't think so. I ultimately on defense, it comes down to keeping guys in front of you and making tackles. I mean, it really. Football is a pretty simple game. I actually coach my fourth grade sons, or help coach my fourth grade sons' flag football team. And it's really as simple as blocking and tackling and and catching and throwing. I mean, football really is as complicated as it's gotten over the years. It really comes down to good technique and executing when you need to execute.
So are you saying that fans are wrong when they get so upset by Coach Ferentz saying it all comes down to execution?
I mean, he's let's just say I really love watching football, but oftentimes I prefer watching it on my couch versus sitting in the stands. And I know that might sound blasphemous to a lot of fans, but I can turn the volume down when it's my TV. I can't turn the volume down for the, you know, the quote unquote armchair quarterback that's sitting two seats down from me in the stands.
Hey, RJ, this is Bill again. That's so funny that you said that it comes down to blocking and tackling. I coach freshman defensive backs at my old high school, and that's what I tell them when they suddenly think that the game's too big or they want to be philosophical about it. I'm saying, this is just blocking and tackling, guys. Come on, get with it. Moving on, you have any thoughts about the rest of the season, especially Penn State? You got any predictions for us?
Well, I am not clairvoyant, and I played football for a long time, so I've been hit in the head quite a bit. You probably don't want a prediction from me. But obviously, I'm always going to pick the Hawkeyes because they're my team. I want to get a shout-out, first of all, to Ike Butker, who was injured last week. I feel so bad for the guy. Actually, his father, Tim, is a friend of ours in Cedar Falls here where my wife and I now live. We moved up here from Iowa City about 7 years ago. My wife is from Cedar Falls. And Tim, Ike's father, actually baptized our oldest son, who is 10, this afternoon in a local lake. Very here. Cool. So I talked to Tim and Chris, who's Ike's mother, about him, and he does have surgery tomorrow, I think at 11 o'clock. So I'm going to ask for some prayer warriors for him so that he can get through that surgery and have a good outcome.
You bet.
But, you know, as far as the rest of the season goes, I'm going to sound totally Ferentz here, like Ferentz here, and just I'm going to say one game at a time. Because I really do think this team could be as good as they want to be. You know, yesterday watching the game, obviously our first two running backs left the game. But, you know, I was happy to see number three and number four come right in and seem like we really didn't miss much of a beat. And I think from an offensive perspective, guys are only going to get better. I think Stanley can make a lot of throws. I think he's, you know, missed a few throws, but he's only going to get better in my opinion. So, you know, coming into the season, we thought the defense was going to be the backbone of the team. And I think they still will be. And I think right now they are. But I could see the offense improving a lot over the course of the season. If they can keep guys healthy, I think they could improve a lot and surprise some teams at the end of the season.
Right on. Well, thank you so very, very much for coming on our show. This has been a great kind of glimpse into that period of time between Fry and Ferentz, and it's really cool to have a former player give his perspective. So thank you so much for taking your time, and go Hawks.
Yeah, and then on behalf of a fan who, you know, has sat through some of those tough seasons, you know, thanks for keeping the faith and keeping working and making sure, you know, being part of the rebuild of Iowa football. You know, that you, yeah. I was just saying to these guys earlier, some of those teams, and, you know, I was talking about Liddell Betts just breaking my heart when he got injured for the bowl game. You know, it's like you guys actually paid the price and put Iowa football back on the map. So
thanks a bunch. You guys did the grunt work and didn't necessarily stick around, you know, weren't there for the reward. So yeah, we're very grateful.
Well, Ian, thanks for having me on. And it was fun to have played for both of those coaches. Obviously Liddell, I actually just saw Liddell this last summer. My recruiting class got together in Chicago for kind of a 20-year reunion. So I got to see a bunch of those guys, and I hadn't seen Liddell for a few years. Obviously, he was one of the bigger recruits in our class. But that guy, he's just a salt of the earth, good dude. And to see him go down and not really play for that bowl game, play in that bowl game, Greving, I think, was the one that came in and kind of had a breakout, breakout game. But you know, it was awesome to go out on a win against Texas Tech in that Alamo Bowl. I wish I would have had one more year of eligibility left so I could have played the next year and won the Big Ten championship and played in the Orange Bowl. Granted, that didn't turn out so hot, but
we yeah, know I, we were there.
I guess on behalf of my recruiting class, I can say this because we talk about it a lot amongst us. We kind of like to say that we were part of that catalyst to transition towards success. And it was a fun time. Granted, we didn't win a lot of games, especially those first 2 years under Ferentz, but obviously they've won a lot of games since, and we as a recruiting class like to say that we were kind of part of the transition to help make that happen. So
RJ, I don't think that's hyperbole at all. I think you guys absolutely were. And absolutely. Thank you for, you know, leaving your blood, sweat, and tears out there. And Hawkeye football is where it is because of guys like you. So thanks once again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. And go Hawks against Penn State for sure.
That was awesome. Once again, that was RJ Meyer, former Hawkeye football linebacker. Really good stuff, guys.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks for arranging to get him on the call, Bill. And if you are a former player, whether you were starter or backup or you know, Heisman runner-up maybe, if you're out there and you want to hit us up and have you on the podcast, then just look for us on Twitter at 12 Saturdays. That's at 12 Saturdays. And, of course, we're on Facebook as well. Just search for us on that. But we'd love to have more players and media types on future episodes of 12 Saturdays.
You know, I was thinking, Jim, it was kind of a sad story to think about only winning one game your whole year. And, you know, RJ was talking about, you know, that first year under Ferentz, and the only team they managed to beat was Northern Illinois, which got me to thinking, well, you know, I mean, they only won one game, but they're still better than Nebraska, right?
Yeah, I mean, I bet you the folks in Lincoln would take that win over Northern Illinois this year.
I kind of hope that that's the last game. You know, I hope they don't win any more games this year either. So I know Bill has a moratorium on being mean to Nebraska, but I'm getting my licks in while I have the opportunity.
So, you know, that's
kick them while they're down.
Well, it's the best time to kick them. So let's take a minute on this. It's the Big Ten. You know, now we're ending the Big Ten season next week, and before we dive into Penn State, the opponent coming into Kinnick, let's talk a little bit about what are you seeing in the West and in the league. I mean, I think you know, from my perspective, the surprises on the downside are Ohio State, Michigan's still a little inconsistent. Northwestern, not as good as advertised, but on the upside, very impressed with Purdue and Maryland. Minnesota, I know they haven't really played anybody. They look like they've got their act together. But Penn State, to me, looks like the complete package, the real deal in the league. And I don't know, are you guys seeing, what are you seeing across the league after non-conference?
You know, I feel like Purdue's maybe getting a little bit too much praise for beating a Missouri team that's really, really in a bad way. I mean, they fired their defensive coordinator the week before. That whole school has been having a lot of issues over the last couple of years with their sports programs, with their academics, everything. So, their new coach, I think, is a breath of fresh air, and I think they're going to get competitive, but I'm pumping the brakes a little bit on that. The other kind of contrarian view I have is, you know, I know Wisconsin, everybody thinks is just that much better than everybody in the West division, but I don't know that I believe that. I think both Iowa and Minnesota can stand toe-to-toe with Wisconsin. I'm not guaranteeing they're going to beat them, but I don't see that much more talent and that much better out of Wisconsin. And to your point, Jim, Penn State does look like the most complete team in the conference right now. And, you know, even should they handle Iowa this weekend, I think how Iowa plays is going to be real indicative of whether Iowa can take a shot at Wisconsin, Minnesota, and take a shot at, you know, maybe winning that West division and maybe setting up a rematch in the title game with the Nittany Lions should they not be successful this Saturday.
Exactly. Bill, where are you seeing?
I'm seeing pretty much what you guys are seeing. The, you know, Purdue hung in there with Louisville, and I think that's why they're kind of hyped right now. But, you know, Louisville got smacked around 47-21 by Clemson, so maybe they're not terrific. But Michigan doesn't look great. I think the Purdue-Michigan game this weekend is going to be a really good one, and I don't think it's going to be to see who goes to Indianapolis, but I think it'll just be an entertaining football game, and I think those teams are kind of evenly matched.
Purdue-Michigan in week four. I mean, just the kind of head-to-head matchup everybody saw coming in August, right?
Right, yeah. Drew Brees versus Tom Brady. If you're, you know, that's what that brings to mind. I don't know about 2017 version of it.
Well, and Illinois is still hot garbage. I just want to interject that.
And Nebraska's 1-2, so the borders are looking a little shaky. So you know, if we could pivot to our informal Encyclopedia Bill segment, one of the questions I was asking coming out of the North Texas game is, what is the you know, Iowa's now 3-0 coming out of the non-conference undefeated. And what, if anything, is that an indicator of how the rest of the season can go? I mean, and, you know, Bill, I know you've got just stats on the back of your eyelids that Tori and I have forgotten all about. But how many times has that happened before? What sort of, you know, tea leaves can we read into the rest of the season based on them being undefeated after the non-conference?
You know, Jim, 75% of the time that Iowa has gone undefeated in the non-conference portion of the schedule, they've won double-digit games. 10-3, they went in 2003. 11-2 in 2009, and 12-2 in 2015. Unfortunately, in 2006, we swept our non-conference portion, and we went 6-7. So whoops on that one. But still, that's an average of 9.8 and 3.5 wins and losses when the team sweeps this part of the schedule. So, you know, my 10-3 prediction is looking pretty good right now.
Man, I feel like double-digit wins might be a pretty tough stretch goal, specifically because of the difficulty in the Iowa schedule this season. But in terms of a rebuilding year, which I still fully believe this is, and I think when you look at the youth of the players we're counting on, our big playmakers, I think it's very fair to still call this a rebuilding year. That doesn't mean you have to be terrible, but, you know, I feel like anything 7 wins and above is a real big credit to a young rebuilding team. And it's hard not to be excited when you hear those kind of stats.
You know, I don't get why you guys, you know, kind of poo-poo my 10-3 pick, because if we lose to Penn State, which I don't think we will, lose to Ohio State, lose to Wisconsin, those are the only 3 ranked teams we play. You know, that's the 3 losses right there. We win the rest of our games and we win a bowl game. Boom, 10 wins.
That would doable. Be awesome. That would be awesome. But Iowa always loses a game or two they have no business losing. Now, they usually win a game they have no business winning on paper either. So, you know, it's not out of the realm. I just said it's a stretch goal.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Well, that kind of gets us to the point where we start to talk about predicting what we're going to see. I mean, Penn State is coming ready or not. You know, whether everybody's healthy and the defense has figured out some ways to remedy what ails them. I'll go first, and I will say I am seeing a loss. And I'm hoping it's respectable. I know there's no such thing as a pretty loss. Like, there, you know, we've had enough ugly wins already this year. But I'm seeing, like, a close game. I want to say, you know, 35-31. With some high scoring, but I don't think they run us off the field like they did last year. I think that Hawks give them a good game, and I'm hoping that, you know, the takeaway is using that as a springboard for the rest of the season. I hope I'm wrong on that part, but I am seeing a hard-fought loss coming up on Saturday.
You know what? I'm thinking very similar score with a better outcome. I'm thinking Iowa wins 38-35. I think we get down. We've been down in the last 3 games, and we were able to battle back. I think we see that again. My pick to click is going to be Nate Stanley. The man, the myth, the legend just keeps growing. I think he leads our offense to some fireworks, and the defense is just barely able to stop Saquon Barkley, but they do. And, you know, I've been trolling the Penn State message boards, and, you know, first of all, they've got a lot of mean things to say about Iowa. Oh, you know, all they do is bring up the scandal. And Iowa fans always bring up that scandal. That's important.
And second, so will all fans forever and from now until the end of time. And they deserve
it. Well-deservedly.
Absolutely. But they are worried about their defense, and they're worried about their pass protection. I think maybe Penn State hasn't come up against a team like Iowa yet, knock on wood.
So I got to throw in my pick to click because I forgot. You said Stanley. I mean, there's got to be someone on the other end of that, and I'm going to go with, once again, my guy Nick Easley. I think he has another a big game. Sorry for forgetting
it. Does he score easily?
He scores easily because he doesn't fumble on the 2-yard line, according to the refs from last Saturday.
Speaking of Nick Easley, I didn't realize he was a junior. That's kind of awesome that we get him next year with Stanley too. So
I thought he only had 1 year of eligibility. He's got 2.
On the broadcast they wrote junior, so I'm hoping that's right. Maybe
I double checked that, and he is indeed a junior. We've got him for 2 years.
Yes, that's awesome. So, you know, Jim, you brought up a really good point, I think, about Penn State, which is, you know, I don't think they've played anybody with a pulse yet. I think this is a pretty historically awful Pittsburgh team. I mean, heck, even Penn State's coach said they're basically the same as Akron, and Iowa State just thumped Akron, right? And then they played like that new team, Georgia State or whatever, this week and thrashed them. So I think night game at Kinnick, you know, I'm still, I think it might be lower scoring than you guys think. Because if you guys remember last year, everybody thought that Michigan game was going to have a lot of points, mostly for Michigan. But unfortunately, I'm not feeling the Kinnick magic against Franklin. He seems to have Iowa's number at this point. My score is going to be 27-24. I think they're going to get the late heartbreaking field goal this time. But I think we're going to walk out of it as Iowa fans feeling pretty darn good. I think the defense is going to look a little bit sharper. So my pick to click is actually going to be Josh Jackson. Again, I think he's really starting to play well. But I think we're going to come out of the game and feel like, you know, we got a real good shot at winning the West Division and maybe setting up a rematch. So that's how I see it.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Wisconsin had these guys dead to rights last year, right? With a new quarterback and everything. And credit to Penn State. I mean, they came roaring back. But they are not Ohio State from a couple of years ago. They are not invulnerable. They have their weaknesses. So I hope to be wrong. I hope my pick's wrong. I hope Tori's pick's wrong. And you're right, Tori. They haven't played anybody yet this year. But, man, have they been thumping those nobodies. I mean, I see they pitched two shutouts, and they've scored over 50 twice. That's hard to do in a scrimmage, dude.
Yeah, look at the Iowa spring game for evidence of that.
well, you know, with that, I guess it's going to be a night game. It's going to be late. I think everybody's going to be in high spirits. Bill, are you coming down for this one?
I'm going to try.
Awesome. Well,
but I want to. We might.
Well, if let me know. We should try and connect. So.
I will be with my lovely bride of 20-some years in Chicago watching Hamilton. So I'm actually glad that it's actually going to be a really good show. And if anything, guys, if Iowa's going to – maybe Iowa will win just because I won't be there to see the awesomeness in person. That does sound like the kind of thing that would happen to me. So, you know, if I have to take one for the team to get the huge win, I guess I can.
Actually,
it's Lord's work, Tori.
Actually, Tori, it's me that always misses the big wins, if you remember.
Well, that is, but that's why I feel like I'm passing that torch on to you.
All right.
This time, you know, I'll be the one that has to hear secondhand about the amazing last-second exciting victory.
Well, let's hope that's true, and I think Bill and I can each give up a point on the Gnome of Knowledge standing. So.
Iowa wins, Bill wins the Gnome.
Well,
so.
Yeah, it's true. He gets
damn right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you enjoy Hamilton. I heard it's a great show. I mean, you shouldn't be down in the dumps about it.
Did I sound down in the dumps? No, I'm very much looking forward to it.
It is a good
show. My wife doesn't believe me when I say that, but I am.
You know, sometimes being a grown up, it's about making choices. You know, unfortunately.
Well, I wouldn't say it's like a choice.
You're choosing to stay married. That's a choice.
There you go. I am. It is our anniversary weekend. I guess I should have added that in too. So it's important, and I'm glad I'm doing it.
Awesome. Well, listen, this is a great show. Really loved our guest, and glad to have that North Texas game in the rearview mirror, and now the real challenges start. So with that, I guess we'll bring this one in for a landing, and we will sign off as we usually do with On Iowa.
Go Hawks.
Beat Nebraska.
Everybody else does.
Too easy.
All right. See you guys. See you next week.